morning. This is Jeff Anderson, Randall Graves from the Clerks movies, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I will see you in the future, and I better see you in movie theaters for Clerks 3. Yes!
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for August 16th, 2022. I'm Steve Fodor.
Chip Hasselflow.
Just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information this week. Chip, today is Tuesday, August 16th. It is time for school, kids. Today is back to school day for me.
Are they going to have nachos for lunch, Steve?
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to do morning announcements, to get on the air and tell my students what's for lunch and all the important news of the day. I am so happy to go back to school today.
I think the kids are ready for it too. You know, they've had a couple of years that were, you know, certainly hopefully unique in their life. And maybe this is the first year that they'll have. It's like maybe whatever that normal is, whatever they feel it is.
That's our hope. We are hoping that we are getting back to normal, getting back to school, getting back to friends. It is time.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Hey, Chip, did you make it to the movie theater to watch a movie this week?
I did not, Steve, but you did.
Yes, sir. The family decided that it was time to go to a movie to get together because it was back to school time. Because my wife and I were going back to school this week, we stopped everything, went to the movie theater, and saw the hit of the summer, the DC League of Super Pets.
You just said this is the hit of the summer. Is this the hit of the summer?
No, this is not. This is a really fun family film. It is silly. It's an animated picture with The Rock as Crypto the Superdog and Kevin Hart as Ace the Bat Hound being really, really good dogs. These are really good dogs. Good dog.
Well, tell us a little bit about what the story is, what's going on.
It's simple. This is a very simple story. Crypto the Superdog feels like Superman is not paying enough attention to him, and then Superman and the entire Justice League, they are all captured by Lex Luthor, and it's all up to Crypto to save them. He gets a whole team of other animals together from a shelter, and they have just ridiculous, silly, funny things to say. I was in a movie theater full of 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds who were giggling at all of the funny little animals and their funny jokes. There's a lot of humor about gas in this dog-based movie. I really enjoyed this, and I do suggest this to anybody who has any experience with Crypto the Superdog. There's a lot of different iterations of this character over the years.
So this is certainly a family film, and it sounds like the giggling means it was good for them.
Yeah, they enjoyed it very much, and I enjoyed it very much, and I'm glad that we have the opportunity to go to the movie theater to as a family and to see a silly movie. We thought about going to see Nope, which is, you know, a very dark look at dark ideas. This was very light, very bright, a cartoon, a comic book come to life. It was a good time.
Well, that wasn't the only family show that you watched this week. Tell us about Lego Star Wars Summer Vacation.
You say family show as in you think that my family watched Lego Star Wars Summer Vacation on Disney Plus with me this week. You are incorrect, sir. Nobody in my house would watch a Lego short with me. I watched this and I loved it. The technology from the Lego movie has been used so well in these Lego shorts, especially the Star Wars shorts over the last few years. This particular story is all about summer vacation. We've got Rey and Poe, Rose, Chewbacca, BB-8, R2-D2, C-3PO, and Weird Al Yankovic hitting the beach.
Steve, somebody tells me this is hit all the things that you love.
Star Wars, Chip, Star Wars, and Weird Al playing a character named, wait for it, Vic Vanko. Weird Al Yankovic, Vic Vanko, is now Star Wars canon as far as I'm concerned. He has a song that he plays that is the pop hit of the summer. Chip. This is so silly and ridiculous, but I tell you, the writers who put together this story give us these silly little aside jokes inside of this Star Wars summer vacation, and I enjoyed every minute of it, and I enjoyed turning my head and seeing my family just shaking their heads like, what are you even laughing about? This is definitely for Star Wars insiders and Weird Al fans.
Dad,
can't we watch something else? Is there something else on? No, this is the only thing on. Watch, come and sit and watch this with me. I loved it. Those of you who are my Star Wars nuts, you will love it as well. You got a chance to see Sandman on Netflix.
It released last week. And, you know, if you remember, Netflix releases all the episodes together. So you can watch them all back to back to back. I don't do that anymore, Steve. I want to watch them a little more, like I'll watch one today, one tomorrow, that type of thing. So I've gotten through about half the season. I will tell you, this is based on Neil Gaiman's comic from a long time ago in the 90s called Sandman. It was released through Vertigo. So this was more of it was aimed at teenagers, I would say older than 8 and 9, more like the 12 and 13 year olds and up. And this is a fantasy series. And it basically is a story of Dream and how he was trapped, what he did with the earth, and how he integrates into people's, I guess, sleep schedule and things of that nature. And ultimately how he escapes and has to re-put together his life after he's been absent for roughly 100 years. This is a very, very good series, especially for those people who enjoyed reading it or enjoyed the audio presentation that was just released maybe a year ago on Audible. But it takes the beats from Gaiman's story. It takes the art elements that were part of these stories, and you can see them. We've got the technology to be able to put together this very high-quality series. I do recommend this. This is probably about 70 out of 100. It really is very, very good. And I think that people would enjoy it.
Is it something that the Harry Potter fans would like? I see a wizard is involved here.
Harry Potter fans, certainly. It's fantasy.
Okay.
This is about the dream world and about the characters that Sandman surrounds himself with, how he interacts with everyday life. And Gaiman is just, he's very good at creating the world. And he was involved in this series. Now, the actors are very good. I mean, in fact, just I'll give you the first episode. The first episode is a couple of people that had lost their sons and they wanted to bring them back to life. And so what they did was they looked for a book of spells. And they accidentally trapped Sandman versus one of the other people. And their goal was to bring their sons who died during, I think, World War I, bring them back to life. And this is about his imprisonment initially and some of the challenges. And very, very, very good. I think that, you know, if you went and as Halloween kind of comes around and you want to watch Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, or Sandman, or Harry Potter, I think these all work very similar.
Nice.
And they kind of dovetail each other. If Harry Potter was for young people, I would say that Sandman's for more teenagers. Certainly, right there for very good. This is a high level program. I think this is going to do really well. Sadly, with Netflix on how things are released, the boom that comes from having a series like this quickly gets lost. Mm-hmm. Because you kind of wash every one of the episodes and then we don't talk about it. But if you think about how HBO Max releases something, they release it on a week. And mm-hmm. so for 8 weeks, you can have a conversation about it. So maybe Netflix has to rethink about how they want it to release their schedule.
It's an interesting experiment because you have complained in the past about the Hulu release once a week on a story that is 10 episodes long. And now you're saying Netflix maybe needs to rethink how they're doing it. It's interesting to me.
Yeah, I think that a lot of their series are getting lost because you get the press for week one, but they just die right afterwards. So it doesn't really get a chance to build and build and build. If you go back to our youth when they were releasing some films, they may be in the theater for a year because there's enough demand to go and watch it. Anyway, just something to think about and something to watch. And I'm not binge watching anymore. I'm only watching an episode at a time. So it's just a little bit different on how I'm doing. It's nice to have it available, but when I'm ready to watch. But once again, I just am not going to sit down for 10 hours and kind of bang out a series. It's just not something I can do.
Yeah, I agree. I agree to an extent because I do binge watch a lot of stuff. This week, we don't have a lot of series coming out, but there's a lot of movies hitting somewhere in the world this week.
And Steve, I'm not sure this is a particularly strong week of movies anyway.
No, it's back to school week. I don't think that the release schedule is going to be great. There's a movie called Beast coming out this week. This is a father and his two teenage daughters hunted by a massive lion on the savannah.
Yeah, Steve, sounds like Jaws, but with instead of sharks, we got a lion.
It's Lion Jaws. I get it. Lion Jaws. Because Moose Jaws was never actually made into a movie.
Oh, my goodness. You thought Shark Week was going to be fun. Wait till Lion Week comes around.
This is Idris Elba in the lead role fighting a lion in Beast.
See, this may be our strongest film for the week. The next one is Delia's Gone.
Yeah, this is the story of a convicted man embarking on a journey of violence and redemption to find out the truth of his sister's death. That, boy, that's dark.
Yeah, that looks awful, Steve. Steve, we got a horror film coming up.
Orphan First Kill is the name of this particular horror film. Julia Stiles and Isabel Furman are in this one.
This is not going to do a lot for people wanting to, import kids to adopt them, because the story is basically a person is imported to be adopted, and then the horror film starts. So, why not do that?
Seems that you're right. That does seem like a bad idea. We do need families for orphans, and we don't want to make them the villain of the story.
Steve, do we have any films that Sally O'Malley could be part of?
Yeah, there's a movie called Spin Me Round. This one features Alison Brie, Aubrey Plaza, Trisha Helfer, Molly Shannon, Fred Armisen, and Ego Wodum. This is an all-star cast in a movie that I don't know deserves all that. This is a woman who wins an all-expenses trip to a company's gorgeous institute outside of Florence, and romance maybe kicks in. The poster is a romance novel cover.
See, that's Florence, Italy, not Florence, South Carolina.
Oh, I was thinking Florence Henderson, but I think she's passed.
Well, anyway, this looks awful. Steve, what we really need is a Sony Classics film.
Yeah, there is a Sony Pictures Classics documentary called Salvatore, Shoemaker of Dreams. Story.
That's Hollywood puts itself together. A man makes shoes for all the stars. You know, we should have a film about that. Oh my God, we've got one.
Yeah, put it together. 1927 Italian shoemaker needs a movie. Let's make that happen. Green light that one.
And for the record, it's been held for 2 years. For 2 years, it's been held. It's being released this week. All for us, Steve.
Because its feet hurt. Because the shoes. There's a movie called 3 Minutes, a Lengthening. This is another documentary. This is a snippet of a 16mm film, a 3-minute piece of film showing an unsuspecting Jewish population in a Polish village at the precipice of World War II. What an interesting find that is, and making a 2-hour movie out of 3 minutes of footage.
Yes, it is. And Steve, let's go to Germany and find out what the next movie's about.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It's called Unicorn Town. It is a documentary about a handful of Americans who went to Germany and played American football in a small German town trying to win their league of American football in Germany. Unicorn Town, because the team is called the Unicorns.
Well, of course they are, Steve. And they get to play teams like from Frankfurt and Berlin, you know, places much bigger. But they're the small town that's going to make it happen, Steve. They're called Unicorns, and they're Unicorn Town.
Cinderella story, coming out of nowhere, German-American football.
Oh, my goodness. Steve, Netflix has a gift for us this week.
Yeah, I've actually been looking forward to this one. It's called Look Both Ways. It is the story of a young lady who is on the precipice of the next step in her life, and her life diverges into two parallel realities. One, where she becomes pregnant and remains in her hometown to raise her child, and another, where she moves to LA to pursue her dream career. We've seen lots of stories like this, where that moment that changes in your life, following that path and seeing the parallel realities. I look forward to Look Both Ways on Netflix.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. Hey, Chip. We read the Bobiverse book, the first book from Dennis E. Taylor about Bob going into space as an AI. Remember that?
I do remember that, Steve, but he must have been writing something else.
Yeah, he's written quite a few books, and this week he gave us a real gift. Dennis E. Taylor published a book called Roadkill this week. This is just as good as the Bobiverse book, and just as entertaining and silly and fun.
So August 1st, it was released on Audible, and you got to listen to this. Tell us a little bit about what the story's about.
Yeah, good point. This is an audible.com release only first, and then they're going to release the text of this book. So it's technically a book, but the audiobook recorded by Ray Porter is phenomenal. His voice, his ability to do so many voices and characters is intriguing. The story of Roadkill, here you go. Ready for this, Chip? What if you were driving down the road one day and suddenly your car hit something and you didn't know what it was? You got out of your car and didn't see anything that you hit, but you see damage on your vehicle. You reach down and you feel that there's an invisible alien that you have struck with your car. What would you do, Chip?
Is it called a coyote? I mean, do we call the insurance company?
Coyote. It's an alien coyote. The premise is that this alien is cloaked, which is why the driver couldn't see it. And
like Harry Potter, right?
Like Harry Potter with an invisibility cloak. That's right. And he feels that this alien is there. He understands that this is an invisible creature.
Does he see dead people?
He's sees dead Wookiees. He describes it as a Chewbacca, which is a great pop culture reference in this story. Dennis E. Taylor says that if you hit an invisible alien with your car, you would imagine that there's a spaceship nearby, that this alien must have come from somewhere. And Dennis gives us a story of a group of kids that find that hidden invisible spaceship and get into it and have an adventure in space in this alien craft. This is a great story. This is full of all sorts of pop culture references, just like the Babaverse series. This is full of characters that I was rooting for from the beginning. These are very likable characters, very deep writing. But the interesting part about this recording of this audiobook is only 5 hours long. That's about a third of what some of our really long stories are on audio.
Steve, do they boldly go where no person has gone before?
Yes, they do. And
do they get to kiss Nichelle Nichols?
Oh, poor Nichelle Nichols. It was so nice to meet her before her time was up. I miss Nichelle Nichols, definitely. Oh, there is no Nichelle Nichols in this story, but there is a wisecracking AI. Dennis E. Taylor apparently really likes the idea of artificial intelligence running spaceships that have a very snarky pop culture based knowledge of Earth. And the AI in this story is that to the 10th degree.
Do you think it's Alf?
No, what I think of it, okay, when I think of the AI in this story, I think of the AI from Flight of the Navigator. Flight of the Navigator is a very similar story where a very young person finds a spaceship, and that spaceship is run by this very silly AI. In Flight of the Navigator, that voice for that was Paul Rubens, also known as Pee Wee Herman. And all I was thinking,
I know you are, but what am I?
All I was thinking during this book was compliance. That's all I want my AI to say. From now on, when I'm talking to Siri or Google or any of those other AIs, I want it to say compliance. I think that everybody that likes this show, and I don't know why you like this show, but everybody who likes this show will like Roadkill by Dennis E. Taylor. I recommend it highly. I will pay Ray Porter to say anything that comes into my mind. I just love the sound of his voice. And the Audible recording where he does so many voices is very entertaining. This is one of those books that I got through the recording of it in a day. Like, I could not stop. I did not want this story to end. And it's a very short story, but well worth it.
Well, it sounds awesome, Steve.
I think you would actually like this, Chip. Since you like the Babaverse, I think you would actually like this story if you picked it up. I know that Pam would. That's Roadkill by Dennis E. Taylor. It was published August 4th, 2022.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our Scroll with It. You know, we meet such wonderful people all across the country, Chip.
We get so lucky, Steve.
And you have brought with you somebody really interesting. We're gonna find out all about the life and times of Jessica DeMarcus today. Jessica is joining us from somewhere in North Carolina, right, Jessica?
Yeah, right in Raleigh.
Right in Raleigh. Right in Raleigh is the name of my third album.
She's the host of Unlearn to Level Up podcast, Steve. She is a coach and a therapist.
A life coach, not just like a sports coach, a life coach. Jessica, what does that mean, a life coach?
It's a pretty loaded question, but basically it's an individual who is trained to support other individuals in improving their lives. So life coach is pretty general. There are people who specialize in more health, business, leadership, relationships, mental, emotional well-being. So there's a lot of variety, but in general, it's just helping people go from good to great through structured conversation.
That sounds a lot like therapy. So what's the difference between being a therapist and being a life coach?
There is similarities for sure. I mean, the reality is that coaching is a modality and practice based off of therapeutic research. So there is a lot of similarity, but I think the difference really boils down to a couple things. One being the client, two being the result, and three being what the work looks like. So in terms of clients, I'm speaking in generalizations, by the way, so I'm gonna just say a blanket statement there. In general, a client that is more appropriate for therapy might be in an earlier stage of change. Maybe their symptomology is more severe, chronic, complex. Maybe it's impacting their ability to function personally or professionally, and they are needing more trained, specialized support. Someone who might be more appropriate for coaching, they're good. They're fine, right? But maybe they're wanting to go from good to great, or they're wanting specialized help in one of those topics I talked about: money, leadership, health, relationships. And maybe they've already started to make some progress and they're prepared and have engaged in change and have, you know, made some momentum. And they're just looking for some support in that with someone who might have crossed that threshold before or can support them in getting to the next level. So that's one distinction in terms of who's more appropriate. And then the second distinction is what the work looks like. Therapy is more relational. We're taking a more holistic view. We are looking at the intersectionality of that person in that environment and considering their past, present, and future and focusing on symptom reduction versus coaching. It's more solution focused. It's more behaviorally oriented. And again, it's more focused on what is the desired outcome and how quickly can we get you to that result.
So me.
You're singing. The ship is singing now.
These are all the things I need. Well, so let me just ask you a question. Are there limitations to therapy?
Yes. I think a couple things that can happen. Therapy is a regulated industry, and I think that there's a lot of beauty in the regulation. It means that you are working with a trained, licensed professional who is held accountable, ascribes to a board of ethics. There's protection in place, but those regulations also present barriers, like you can't work with someone that you're not licensed in that state, right? There's some restrictions around virtual therapy. There's some restrictions around self-disclosure. There's restrictions around, like, if you're going through insurance, what type of therapy is accepted? So there are some limitations. With coaching, you're not going to be presented with those limitations, but you're going to be presented with the barrier of there's no regulation. And so you really got to do your homework because there's no checks and balances. So there's pros and cons to both. But again, the regulations that are in place for therapy are centered around safety of the client.
As of today, if we had to ask you, it sounds like you would prefer coaching. Tell us why.
I, at this point in my life, personally prefer to practice coaching over therapy because it's more in alignment with my values of freedom, autonomy, flexibility. I felt when I was still practicing therapy, just overworked and underappreciated, and it's not a well-paying industry, and you're working with very severe cases. Especially in my case, I was very specialized. I worked with children and mothers who experienced trauma and were undocumented. So I'm doing therapy in a different language. I'm doing therapy with people who were undocumented, struggling with homelessness, mental health, food insecurity, trauma histories, like, you know, fear of deportation. It just was so complex and so heavy. And I was doing that hour after hour, day after day. And it just wasn't sustainable for me mentally and emotionally. As I started getting older and becoming more clear on my values, not just valuing fairness, social justice, diversity, inclusion, but valuing freedom and autonomy, it got to the point where I had to make a decision. And so I transitioned into coaching. It was not an easy decision because, if I'm being transparent, I feel like I'm not able to serve some clients because coaching is not as accessible to them as therapy is. So that kind of hurts my heart a little bit, but I had to make a decision in terms of what was best for me.
And something you did also while you were a practicing therapist, you also were a college professor. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I was teaching at Temple University in their MSW program. So teaching basically trauma therapy. So teaching therapists how to treat children and families who have a trauma history. And what was really beautiful about my work there is I got to design some courses around how do you as the clinician doing that work take care of yourself. And that was actually probably my favorite part of the work, because I don't think that gets enough attention. So that was a really cool opportunity. I did that for a few years when I was back in Philly.
When should a person seek a coach?
There's really no right or wrong time. It's kind of like, when should you schedule a visit with your PCP, your primary care physician? It's like, it's good practice to kind of have these forms of accountability and support, and having someone call you out on your blind spots and helping you live your best life. I would say, though, what I've noticed is the tipping point for most people who actually move from considering to hiring a coach is either they're in a pain point where they are sick and tired, or there's something on the line in terms of risk. So they're motivated by that pain point, or pleasure, where they're like, you know what, I want this, I'm ready for it, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I want it and I'm willing and committed to figuring it out, because it's that important to them. So I think for me, I've noticed one of those two points is usually what brings people from considering to actually going forth and hiring a coach.
So we've already determined that I am like the ideal candidate for this. Like, at some point, you should get focused, right?
Probably. Again, I'm biased. I think everyone should have a therapist and or coach, just like everyone should have a primary care physician. Like, we know the importance of the mind-body connection. And I think if we could pay more attention to our mental and emotional well-being and be more proactive in taking care of that, that we could experience more health and joy and wellness in our lives.
And you mentioned a list of issues that might be covered in coaching earlier. So what are some of the goals that you have as a coach for a new client?
So I would say my ultimate goal is to help the client reach their goal. So everyone's coming in with a different goal. And that's part of my job as a coach, is to help them articulate not just what they don't want anymore, but what do they want, and how can we focus that energy towards what are we working towards versus trying to get away from. And so whenever the client comes up with that, that's the goal. But I will say a back burner goal for me with every single client is sustainable joy. Like, how can we create more health, more connection, more presence, more joy, more positive feelings that are sustainable versus fleeting and attached to these external accomplishments or circumstances? So that's kind of a back burner goal for me, whether I articulate that to them or not. But I would say the goal depends on what the client's actually wanting.
So if a person's listening to this interview and they said, you know, I'm thinking about getting a coach or a therapist, what should they be looking for in that person? How should they interview that person?
This is a great question. I would say for a therapist, try to figure out what your presenting symptoms are and maybe what that would sound like in the therapy world. So if your problem is like low energy or, you know, sadness, like, is it grief? Is it depression? Or if it's panic attacks or imposter syndrome or self-doubt, maybe it's anxiety. So trying to find the presenting symptoms and what that would sound like in the therapy world. And then using that, look for a therapist who specializes and or is trained in that. Because there are, again, therapy is like a 200-year-old practice. There's a lot of really beautiful research around standardization and, you know, effective forms of treatment. So if you know you're struggling with depression and find a therapist who's trained to treat that, they're probably trained in a modality or intervention that has been proven in science to be effective for that set of symptoms. So just, I would say, do your homework in terms of what your symptoms are and who specializes in that. And then also, what's really interesting is the research shows that approximately 70%, which is a huge percentage, of clients' positive change is actually more likely associated with the rapport, connection, felt sense of safety, and therapeutic alliance with the provider than the intervention actually used. Not saying that the intervention is not important, but at the end of the day, find someone that you feel safe being vulnerable with and you feel connected to. That is going to alone be super helpful. So when you're looking for a therapist, those are some of the things I would consider. And obviously, if you have access to resources like insurance, you can call your insurance card and have a conversation with a representative who can help get you connected to.
And the same thing for coaching. Is it very similar? Do you really need to be, you know, connected with that person in order to get the best value out of that conversation?
I would be curious to find out. So coaching is very, very new in terms of how we look at it today. It's only about 30 to 40 years old, and it started in the finance industry. So life coaching is a very new practice, and there's no research in terms of efficacy, and there's no standardization, which again, there's beauty in that, which we can get into if you like to, but there is no research around that. So I can't say. I would say, though, borrowing from the science, it makes sense. So it might be something important to think about. I would say with coaching, though, those questions, in addition to vetting the person, because at the end of the day, the barrier to entry is low/non-existent. Anyone can call themselves a coach, and it is a higher price point in terms of what you're investing in. And so you want to do your research in terms of who you're working with. What is their framework? What is their experience? Who have they worked with? What have their client results been? And what are you actually paying for? Are you just going to get paid advice? Are you just going to get support and encouragement? Or are you going to get coaching? So I think with coaching, you might have to do a little bit more homework, because with therapists, if you're seeing a therapist, it's done. They have a graduate level degree. They have a license. They're standing with a board. They do continuing education credits. I mean, there are bad therapists, just like they're a bad coach, but at the end of the day, you're going to be sitting with someone who has been vetted by some form or another.
Sounds very similar to the education world that I live in, where teachers certainly have to have that relationship with the students to get to that level of education. That sounds very familiar to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking of athletic coaching right there, and Vince Lombardi, when he, you know, the kind of work that he did with his players, and he said, you know, second place is first loser. I mean, it's the first thing you need to think about.
Yeah, I mean, coaching in general it's not a new practice. It's been around forever in different industries. Again, I think life coaching, though, is something that is fairly new, and people are still kind of wrapping their mind around, what is this? And do I need it? Is it helpful?
How do you measure success with it then?
So for me, the way I measure success is I take notes, and there's some paperwork that I do with all clients, so that there's documentation of where were you? What were your symptoms? What were your presenting concerns? What were, you know, some of your pain points? What were some of the things that you were saying? I also record coaching sessions so clients have them forever to reference. And we literally create a treatment plan together, or a goal list with objectives that we can measure. And that's how we measure. Like, when we identify what the goal is and the gap that needs to be crossed, did we follow the plan? What worked? What didn't work? Did you hit the result? How have you grown externally, internally? So there is some form of measurement. It's not going to be like, I know, Chip, you're in the finance industry. If someone comes in and says that they want to grow their investment by blank percentage or whatever, like, you can, it's a yes or no. Did you hit the goal? That's not the case with life coaching and therapy, but there are ways that I make sure that we are moving forward every single week and not getting caught in the weeds of life week to week.
And how long is a relationship? I mean, do people come in for a period of time? Is it ongoing forever? How does that work?
So with coaching, again, there's so much variability. It depends on who you're working with. Me personally, I work with people 3 or 6 months. Like, those are the two options, just because statistically speaking, it takes 60 to 90 days to even create a new habit. So 3 months is really the shortest amount of time that we can see meaningful change. I offer the 6-month option because that integration piece is really important for a lot of people, especially if it's a newer habit or a newer skill set or a newer transition for them. They're going to need that integration time and that support to kind of buffer against those inevitable setbacks so that they don't relapse. With therapy, there's a lot more openness. I would say, again, with therapy, the average amount of therapy sessions is about 8, statistically speaking. Attrition rates are really high, but you could see a therapist anywhere from one session to a every week for a decade. It really depends on what your needs are, what access to resources you have, what's covered under your insurance, and also your level of commitment to the process.
So we've talked a lot about how you work with clients. Let's talk a little bit about your podcast and why you set it up and how this works.
So the podcast was a selfish and selfless endeavor. So it was selfish in the sense that I really missed teaching and I missed nerding out and sharing the science and going into deep philosophical and psychological concepts that primarily my marketing base is Instagram. Instagram just doesn't have the time or space or attention for deep, meaningful conversations. So for me, selfishly, it's an opportunity for me to nerd out and, you know, kind of stay active in that psychology therapy world. It's a selfless endeavor in the sense that coaching is not cheap. It is an investment. And I do miss my clients and being able to serve them. And I feel every once in a while a little bit of guilt kind of transitioning into coaching and them not having access to a provider like me. So this is a free platform where people can still get access to quality information in short, digestible bits that's evidence-based, based in science. I take time with each episode, but I try to make it not just accessible, but relevant and applicable. That's really what the podcast is about. And it's called the Unlearn to Level Up podcast because not only is it about teaching additional skills, but it's helping people build awareness around what they might have learned or are doing that if they just unlearned it or did something differently or just stopped doing it, that even that alone could improve their life drastically. So it's an interesting space for me to kind of speak freely and in depth about things that, quite frankly, on social media, no one cares about.
Well, at the end of listening to one of your podcasts, what I find myself doing is kind of, you know, thinking about the topics that you bring up. And I just find myself thinking about it for the day or more, because it is very thought-provoking. And it's very useful. I mean, you're giving tools on how to think about ideas and subjects and things that we all have challenges with.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I really try to make it relevant and applicable in the sense where it's like, okay, you might have heard this concept or you might not have heard of it, but this is what it is. And this is what it looks like in real life. It's what it looks like in real time. And we are bombarded by information and stimuli every single second of every single day. And so for me, it's really about how can I make this as simple as possible for you?
It's like people have too much scrolling.
Yeah. People do scroll a lot and people consume. And it's interesting because there's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. And I think people know a lot, but I don't think people are crossing that threshold to wisdom because they're not implementing what they're learning. And so there's no skill set actually being built. It's just information that's going in and going out because there's too much of it anyway. The brain's like, we haven't applied it, so it's not relevant and it's not useful. So it's in there, but you'll never have access to it. So I really try to break through that.
Yeah, Chip, you know, podcasting can be therapy in and of itself when we come together and talk about things for like 2 hours, then press record for 40 minutes.
Well, certainly it can be. But, you know, one of the things that I'm immediately reminded of is the number of listeners who've come up and talked to us about how just being, think about that radio host from a long time ago, the late night radio host. You know, just by having a format where you're presenting information, it touches people in a very deep way. And sometimes they are on things that, you know, that we choose to talk about, things that are kind of you know, in the grand scheme of things, kind of frivolous, certainly have meaning and they can give us deeper insights, but, you know, a movie may not change your mind. And then we have things like, you know, where we have Jessica's podcast that really could be like, this is a tool and you can use this and your life can be better. There's this magic balance between how you spend your time.
Agreed. That's beautiful, Chip. Jessica, how can we find the Unlearn to Level Up podcast?
So it's available on Apple and Spotify. You can either type in Unlearn to Level Up, or you could type in my name, Jessica DeMarcus. You could also go to jessicademarcus.com and listen to all the episodes there, or find me on Instagram at @jessdemarcuscoaching. And not only will you find the podcast on there, but you'll also find some really cool freebies like journals I've created over the years and guides to help you work through some things that we talked about today.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you, guys. This was fun.
And Steve, thinking about things that are going on in the world around us, looks like Juliet Prison has something for us, Steve.
I'm going to prison, Jessica. That's the headline. This Friday and Saturday, Blues Brothers Con is coming to the old Joliet Prison in Joliet, Illinois. The Blues Brothers are coming to town. Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi are going to hit the stage and perform as the Blues Brothers on Friday night, August 19th. And then on Saturday, we're going to go back to prison and we're going to just hear some great blues bands. And then we're going to sit together and watch the original Blues Brothers movie from 1980 on the wall of the old Joliet prison. I got to tell you, this is bucket list stuff for me as a Chicagoan. There's nothing more Chicago. There's no movie more Chicago than the Blues Brothers, and going to the old Joliet prison and being there with all of our rowdy friends is going to be fantastic Friday and Saturday.
So what you're saying, Steve, this is a mission from God.
I'm on a mission from God.
Find it. We, you know, the old Joliet prison, it's in our notes. You can find out more about this convention. This maybe an annual event going on.
I hope so.
And the other thing I'll mention to you is that when you see the police there, reach out and touch them, because that's what the Blues Brothers would ask you to do, Steve.
That's right. JolietPrison.org for all the details. Tickets are very, very inexpensive. That's a lot of entertainment for just $2. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for everything you do. I look forward to hearing all about what you're learning and how you're sharing that learning at the Unlearn to Level Up podcast.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
I'm not sure what happened there. We'll see you in the future. I'm